Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
I don't care much, but I do hope that the government would invest in education. You know, those schools that are not child-worthy, those schools that still have pit toilets, you know, like, I do wish that the government would invest in education, foundation phase, even tertiary level.
This whole budget thing, I remember growing up and I used to say, I think at the time we were like, I think 49 million people. I'm like, there are 49 million people in the country and the budget is in the billions. Surely if each human being got R1 million, that would stimulate the country in some way. And some guy was like, yeah, that's not possible. People are careless, whatever. And now that I'm old, I'm like, you know, thinking about it, people in government, in some government institutions are careless with the money. So why don't they let the taxpayers be careless with their money? I don't know. That's how I feel about the budget.
Well, as you can tell, we're zoning into the budget speech. And those were a few voice notes that we had from our colleagues on Kaya Drive, who asked many of you, do you care about the South African budget speech? And there were mixed reviews. That's just two of the lot. But we're also happy to hear your thoughts and perspective. What are your concerns about the budget speech for 2025? And more so, do you have a guide for Kodongwana? Share it with us. Well, tonight we're going to be hearing from two guests, phenomenal leaders within their own rights, who will be giving us some insight into how we can resolve the SOE challenge in South Africa. This is on the back of a wonderful article that was published on MoneyWeb, reflecting on both of their thoughts. And we thought we'd bring the conversation here to help all of us as South Africans fully comprehend some of the challenges involved with fixing the likes of Transnet, Eskom, and whatever happened to Post Office, which we know is also facing ongoing liquidation. Well, let's speak now to two of our guests, Kaya Sithole, independent analyst, who is joining us to give us some insight into the thoughts here, and from the Institute of Directors in South Africa, the CEO, Pommy Nathison, who'll be giving us some insight into going beyond just the numbers, but also looking at the necessary appointments in leadership that do play a role in the survival of SOEs. Jobe, I'd like to start off with you. Welcome to the show. Now, you are someone that we've often spoken to regarding state-owned entities in South Africa, and of course, just the survival and the mechanics around the operations. And whether we've spoken about SAA, the South African Post Office, and tonight specifically Transnet and Eskom, one thing's for certain, as you state in this article, that these might be important institutions, but boy, do they find themselves in a significant quagmire.
Yes, so I'm saying that I think what has happened in recent years is that every budget speech has really become a litmus test for what the government's view on the state-owned entities is. And of course, every single budget is really preluded by them asking for more resources, asking for more assistance. And then the state then has to take a position on deciding who to entertain and how much to allocate to them. And I think when we then see how much gets allocated, you get to understand which ones the state has regarded as too strategically important to fail. But so many of them, they do actually need help, quite simply do not merit the help. Because when you then look back at what led to the positions that they find themselves in, there is an ongoing sense of ill discipline in how they are governed and managed. And until that is changed, you get the impression that one bailout will simply open the floodgates for many more. So that's why the state has taken a view of simply deciding that some are worth meriting and others simply just get ignored in the conversation.
And maybe let's start on that focus as to which ones are typically worth meriting versus others. We typically had the same argument around SAA a few years ago, and we've seen how that's evolved.
Yeah, and I think what has been undeclared is that the state has clearly created a list of those that they regard as significantly important for them never to be allowed to fail. And I think you'll see it is the ones that have a cross-cutting effect on the economy, whether it's Transnet or even Eskom, where if they fail, it isn't just that one state entity that has failed. It is other state entities that might fail. It is the economy at large that gets put at risk. But this is not something that the state has actually come out to say that, look, for those of you that are not part of this list, you better have a very compelling business case for asking us for more resources. And in the absence of that, you simply must find your own way. What we do remember is that the previous finance minister, Tito Mboweni, who was perhaps a bit more frank and less diplomatic than other politicians, quite simply said that, look, in the case of SAA, for example, it just didn't see the point of putting money into it. And that, of course, gave the impression that the state had taken a view, at least National Treasury had taken a view, that some resources quite simply were not worth putting into those particular entities. But until we have a very clear and a cogent explanation of what warrants a bailout and when these bailouts are going to be provided and under what conditions, it really becomes a toss-up. So the post office in particular is hoping to hear something on Wednesday. Don't think they're going to hear what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. Transnet wants to hear something. They might hear something, but not necessarily what they've asked for. And of course, Eskom has got a perpetual balance sheet deficit that somebody must fix someday. And until you get that right, it's always going to be a question of what do you do with the resources that you have.
Kaya, you're a numbers guy and typically have reviewed the financial standing of many of these entities, including the likes of Safcol, Denel, and many others that are typically listed as state-owned entities in South Africa. When you look at the metrics and the numbers, which, and even the role and function they serve in the economy, what's your assessment on those that should be prioritized by the state?
There's been an evolution over the past 30 years where some of these entities obviously operated in sectors that have been opened up in the sense that competitors have been allowed to emerge and thrive, and competitors have also been able to do so without the bureaucratic burden associated with state entities. Some of the CEOs of state entities have even cited the limitations or the operational limitations of the PFMA as an example of why they continuously get left behind. So what you then have is a process where some have evolved, some sectors have evolved around these entities, and these entities have been left behind. So if you look at the recent post office amendment bill, for example, it is basically a bill that says this particular entity is operating with the 1950s model. Let us bring it to modern times. But bringing it to modern times essentially took it to the 1990s, and we're now in 2025. So the things that the post office is now allowed to do are the type of things that entities like Postnet and other logistics partners have been able to do for the better part of the past 30 years. So while the intention was good, it is unfortunately still born on the basis that it simply falls it into two decades from where we are, rather than making it feature fit as an organization that enjoys a significant geographic footprint but simply doesn't have the operational blueprint in order to thrive in the times we live in.
My next question, I'm certainly going to start off with yourself, Kaya, but link it to Parmi from the Institute of Directors in South Africa. Kaya, you've mentioned that government has often struggled with poor oversight of these institutions, largely linked to the leadership that is appointed as directors and even to the board, hence the financial malfeasance that we've witnessed over the years. Let's unpack that a little bit further just to get some clarity as to how this has proven to be the Achilles heel of the business.
So when you look at particularly some of the more important ones, they were important not only to us as citizens, but also, unfortunately, given the oversized nature of their balance sheet and the cross-cutting, you know, procurement contracts that they have, they became very lucrative as, you know, a focus area for those that had ill intentions during that particular decade that we've just emerged from. So what that then meant is that these particular entities were always the ones that every single minister with oversight wanted to have a say and who got in them. And of course, politicians tend to prefer people who have a sense of loyalty towards them rather than loyalty towards a particular business. Mm-hmm. So when you then see at how that particular governance model prevailed across very strategic state entities, it is not surprising that a lot of them have been really left out to dry. It is not surprising that a lot of them have been in an operational and a strategic drift for a very long time, because those that were in charge were actually focusing on other things rather than managing them properly. And of course, had you had better governance and you had better oversight, it would have been very clear that, look, we think there's an existential risk in relation to this entity. Let us create a roadmap for the future. Let us engage with those that can help us. Let us actually put up a roadmap that ensures that these entities are indeed able to survive with the ability to fulfill the mandate that has been defined, whether it's the commercial mandate or whether it's a social mandate. That should have happened, but unfortunately, the focus was elsewhere. And when that focus was distracted, these entities were essentially hung out to dry, and we're now paying the price for that.
Mm. Parmi, let's come to you here. Of course, this is where the theme around governance typically comes to the fore. And for the large part, as Kai has mentioned, we've been found failing, especially when it comes to key leadership at state-owned entities. Your thoughts on how the environment does need to change and where we have seen green shoots of positivity?
Sure, I just want to check if you can hear me clearly.
Loud and clear. Thank you. The line is better.
Perfect. So, yeah, I just to reiterate Kaya's points around SOEs playing such a critical role, not only in the economy, but also to society, right? So it's so important that we get them right, that they are able to survive and thrive and add value to South Africa. And therefore, that brings me then to finding the right leadership. So having the right people in charge of managing the organization, but then also one level higher at the board level in overseeing and controlling the entity, really. Now, at this year's State of the Nation address, the president again spoke about professionalizing the public sector and specifically spoke around plans to involve the Public Service Commission in the appointment of boards to SOEs. Now, if I look back in my archives, at every single point of having a SONA and every single year, I'm sure the president has made this promise around changes to the way SOE boards are going to be appointed. So unfortunately, what we just keep hearing is the same promise, but not much delivery. So we don't really see things changing. There's no transparency to us as the public in terms of how these appointments are made. So in the private sector generally, there are criteria that are set out in an advertisement for non-executive directors. There are interviews that take place. The CVs and credentials and experience of the people who are being put forward are tabled at an AGM for shareholders to vote and elect board members.
Yes.
But in the public sector, because there's only one shareholder, that being government, and generally in an SOE, that government is represented by a specific minister, that person pretty much has all the say on who gets appointed to these boards. And I think the process is not transparent enough. We as the public aren't clear on what credentials were used. And of course, the political influence and that word cadre deployment that we've heard over the years, one has to wonder whether people are being appointed for the right reasons to add value to that organization, because they have the competence and knowledge, skills, experience, and track record, etc., or whether they're appointed because of their political affiliation, unfortunately. We did make some suggestions to government over many years on improvements to the process in how SOE boards can be appointed. And we actually worked with the Department of Public Services and Administration many years back on a guide to the appointment of board members to SOEs, which we were quite excited about because we thought this could bring the real change that is necessary. But unfortunately, this guide was also squashed at the point of going to cabinet for approval. So, you know, all in vain, I guess.
Maybe let's come back to some of the proposals and recommendations that you've made specifically around the nomination process in order to professionalize the appointment of key board members and directors to the public sector. Has government been open to these suggestions?
You know, we thought there was appetite at the point of working on that guide with the DPSA, but when the guide was not approved at cabinet level, I guess it looks like there isn't real appetite from government to change the way things are at the moment. And I guess, you know, bringing in clear criteria on what's necessary and the director competencies when making appointments, bringing in perhaps some independence in the whole nominations process, so not having just the minister himself alone make a decision, etc., perhaps doesn't play to the political agenda.
Back. But Pommy, let's come to you. I can imagine, of course, important business insight. This does influence the economics of the country, the fiscal discussion, but also just the appetite that business does have in terms of working with government. Your expectations as to what you hope the minister will address on Wednesday regarding SOEs?
I think that's a difficult one because I think our areas of real concern and our areas of our mandate in terms of appointments to boards, etc., generally are covered in the State of the Nation address, which has already taken place. I mean, we'll wait and see whether the budget speech touches on any of those aspects. But certainly there are improvements needed in the way we are selecting and appointing board members and CEOs of these entities.
Got you. Kaya, we've got you back on the line. Thank you so much. Some gremlins are hating our conversation today, but you had us
yes.
on a note regarding the president's stance and hopefully how that translates to the budget speech.
Yes, so I was saying that the State Enterprises Bill is obviously perhaps the most important development we've seen in recent years that seeks to address cross-cutting issues in relation to the model of managing state enterprises in the country. I think the iterations that we've seen of it has obviously gone back and forth, and one of the key challenges was that the bill had proposed essentially making the president a super shareholder who had veto power over absolutely everything. That was problematic. And I think also the secondary question of whether there will indeed be a board, a professional board that is responsible for really rolling out a uniform oversight model, a more professional oversight model of a state-owned enterprises. Those for me are the big and more important things. And there's also obviously the eternal question of who's going to get what bailout and on what basis they're going to get that particular bailout. That is something that we always have to anticipate in a budget. And I expect that the minister cannot ignore the big elephant in the room. There is a positive story, of course, in that Eskom, at least operationally, seems to be on the right route. And then obviously the next step is how do you then get it to be on the right financial footing? And perhaps taking from the president's speech a couple of weeks ago, the changing of the model of how municipalities and subnational government structures interact with state entities is going to be an important one.
Definitely, especially managing their debt to some of these entities remains critical. Before I let you both go, Jobe, we often get a question from our listeners to say, why save the SOEs? Just give us the money as citizens. We all know that it doesn't work that way. Maybe help us and remind us why.
Well, I think state-owned enterprises are remarkably important in that many sectors, in perhaps all economic sectors, needed to have a grandfather that starts either by laying the infrastructure or making the type of investments that are patient enough in order to enable the sector to evolve. So when you look at Eskom, for example, in the absence of the state having stepped in and created that infrastructure, private enterprise quite simply doesn't have the resources and private enterprise doesn't have the patience. So you could essentially say if private enterprise has to do it, they will do it at such an exorbitant cost that you wouldn't be able to achieve mass rollout. And that's just one example. So the importance of that is that state entities are then also able to explore what we refer to as a social mandate, which is the one that says that, look, there will be some citizens who cannot afford to buy this particular product at the point of delivery. So therefore, the state must either step in through subsidies or indeed compelling this entity to give some free allocation of those resources so that citizens can be able to access the resources one way or another. The private entities on their own, left to their own devices and capitalism, quite simply wouldn't entertain that mandate, and many more citizens will be denied access to critical resources.
Very important. Jobe, thank you so much for your time this evening and for bearing with us through the technical gremlins. Appreciate your feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Kaya Sithole, independent analyst there joining us to give us some insight. And not forgetting Palmy Nathison, CEO of the Institute of Directors in South Africa. Palmy, thank you so much for reminding us around the importance of governance.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Palmy Nathison there from the Institute of Directors in South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.